This is a Dreamcast disc and is for use only on a Dreamcast unit. Playing this disc on a hi-fi or other audio equipment can cause serious damage to its speakers.
Dreamcast, up to 6 billion players.
Welcome back to the stage of history.
Why don't we play together?
Hey, it's time to make some crazy money. Are you ready? Here we go!
Please stop this disc now.
Hello and welcome to yet another episode of the Dreamcast Junkyard Dream Pod. You can't keep us down. You cannot keep a good Dream Pod down. This is episode 82 of the Dream Pod. My name is Tom and I'm joined by three of my regular co-hosts. I'm joined by Mr. Mike Phelan. Hello, Mike.
Hello, Tom. Good to be back.
Indeed, ready and raring to go. I'm joined by Lewis Cox. Hello, Lewis. How are you doing?
Hey, I am good. I am also raring to go.
Fantastic. And last but not least, this is usually the spot that's reserved for James, where I introduce him last, but he's not on this podcast. I'm going to come to you last, Martin. Welcome, and thank you for joining us.
Thank you. Cheers. Yeah, I'm happy to keep James out of it, to be honest. Yeah, good to be here.
Excellent stuff. Okay, we've got an action-packed show for you this time. Don't know if that's the right word, action-packed. Well, it's packed. Don't know if there's much action. we're going to talk about some new Dreamcast games. We're going to talk about a new development in the Shenmue community. And we're now going to enlighten you what we've been doing in the intervening weeks and months since our last episode, where we always start this podcast talking about what we've picked up and played on the Dreamcast and on our current gen systems. I am going to come to you first, Mike. What have you been doing on current gen and Dreamcast?
Yeah, so I've actually been in a bit of a current gen kick at the current time. So I bought a few racing games on Xbox One. I bought Project Cars 3. I also bought the WRC 9.
Oh, yes.
And I also something else, which is pre-order. So that was pointless me even saying that, wasn't it, really? Dirt 5, which is coming out quite soon. but I've bought two racing games. Good games, actually. Project Cars 3 has been a bit lambasted in the press a little bit. It's not really similar to its predecessors, which it's not. However, it is a fantastic arcade racing game, and actually the kind of game which I really would imagine a Dreamcast would have on it if it was still going 20 years after its demise. Apart from that, I've also been playing a little bit on Saturn. I've had a bit of a Saturn kick the last year, and I bought some of the last shooters I really wanted in the last couple of weeks. So I bought Game Paradise. I also have been playing a lot of Radiant Silvergun in the last couple of weeks as well.
Your Saturn collection must be pretty full with like the crown jewels now with all the shmups.
Yeah, so I've had a really lucky year in terms of my job. I've had a promotion and stuff, so I have gone a little bit to town on buying games I never would have thought I would have bought before. So yeah, I've got Radiant Silvergun and Battle Gariga. I believe that's how you pronounce it. I don't actually know.
Have you got Silhouette Mirage? Is it Silhouette Mirage? Is that another one?
No, I haven't. No. Yeah. No. So I bought Saturn for fighters and shooters because it's the two genres I really have enjoyed the most on Dreamcast in the last few years, and genres I never really liked before that much. So I wanted to really play some classics on the Saturn. Got some really good deals from Alan, regular person I buy from. Anyone who goes to shows in the UK will know who Alan is.
And Alan of Alan's Japanese Retro Games.
Alan of Alan's Japanese Retro Games, and also of a shop, Forgotten Worlds, which he's going to be opening in Glasgow, or near Glasgow, I believe. It might actually not be in Glasgow. I'm not quite sure where it is, but up there anyway, in Scotland somewhere. He's opening a shop quite soon with an arcade in it. And,
interesting.
If you join the group Forgotten Worlds, he has that on there. But yes, I've been a lot of Saturn gaming the last few weeks. I've had a lot of time to play games at the last part of lockdown. I had to take some holiday before I went back to work. So, yeah, been interesting. Been rekindling my gaming mojo, because I think as a lot of us found after a few months of playing games quite a lot, I got quite bored of playing games, so it's good to play something a bit different and reignite my passion for gaming.
Yeah, definitely. Cool, mate, nice one. Anything on the Dreamcast?
So nothing purchased in terms of games. I've bought a couple of Japanese versions of games. I've got UK versions of, but I have bought a massive stack of Japanese magazines, which I've hopefully may help Andrew, for Dreamcast Year 2 a little bit, so I can hopefully get some information which isn't necessarily that public. But just good to have lots of magazines, lots of pictures that I can look at.
Fantastic. Okay, Martin, I'm going to come to you next. What have you been playing? Current gen or Dreamcast?
Yeah, so I'll kick off with the Dreamcast. I haven't bought anything new for that, and I've been trying out this this little widget that I'll talk about later. So I've been going through some of my collection, just testing games with a different controller to normal. So that's been good fun. I haven't played anything specifically on Dreamcast. I'm in a bit of a lull gaming-wise until, I would say, pretty much this week when I picked up again Grand Theft Auto 5 on the PS4, which I've still got. It's just been sat on the shelf. My brother and I thought we'd just do some GTA Online again. And that game is nearly 10 years old, if you can believe it, which is a bit epic and surprising, and there's some frame rate stutters, and it's showing its age now when you look at today's current releases, but at the same time it's still so good, and there's so much in there. They've got open wheels racing, so like F1 racing, and we were playing that last night for about 2 hours, and then we realized that we were actually within Grand Theft Auto, and I think this is the way that those kind of games are going to go. It's the games within the games. It reminded me actually of Shenmue, you know, being able to play Hang On and all this stuff, going to the arcade, and it's very similar to that kind of experience, except that it's a little different to Shenmue when when you peel back the covers. But yeah, that's been most of my gaming. I stopped playing Tetris the other day because I was kind of seeing Tetraminos everywhere.
Was that Tetris, so, the PSVR one?
Yeah, which is absolutely amazing. I haven't played Tetris for ages, but I'd been lent this VR from my girlfriend's brother and thought, okay, I'll just get this and pick it up. My friend of mine, who I really respect his opinion, he said it was really good. And good God, is it addictive. It's Tetris meets, Rez, because it's the developers of Rez and the music. And it's just the way it all comes together is just absolutely epic. So, yeah, you'll have to give it a go.
I'll keep that in mind, yeah. I'm going to go next, Lewis. I hope you don't mind. There is a reason for that, and it will become clear, and that will sort itself out. But I've been playing quite a lot of current-gen stuff just because I recently got an Xbox One X, and it was really cheap, so I couldn't really turn it down. And I'd heard about Game Pass and this and the other, and I'd never actually investigated what it was. And then when I got my Xbox One X and got Game Pass, I was just like, wow, this is amazing. I could play all these games. So many games that I've missed in this generation, having owned a PS4 since the very early days of this gen. So I've been playing a game called Tell Me Why on the on the Xbox, which is is it Don't Nod, the company that makes those kind of narrative adventures? Mm-hmm. It's very similar to, what was the one with the time travel?
Life is Strange.
That's the one, Life is Strange, very very similar to that, where you play as a brother and a sister, one of whom is transgender. I think it's really well done. For somebody like me who's not very kind of up on that kind of topic, I found it very very interesting, very engaging, very kind of educational as well, just kind of seeing how, you know, transgender issues might affect people and how it might affect their life growing up. So that was, like I say, very educational game. I've only played the first chapter so far. I've downloaded chapters 2 and 3, which are now out, so I will get around to those eventually. But on the PS4, obviously, I continue to plough through, no pun intended, SnowRunner and Pro Evolution Soccer 2020, because I'm just addicted to those two games. On the Dreamcast, I've not really played a lot, other than the games that I am playing or replaying for an article I'm writing at the moment about lesson on Dreamcast exclusives. I don't really want to talk about them because I want it to be a little bit of a surprise when I actually publish the article. Obviously, if you're listening to this in 2022, then the article would have been published now, if I get to it that time, that is, if there's still a functioning society by then. So I've been playing on the Dreamcast a little bit, but nothing that I actually really want to reveal. Oh, other than Xenocrisis, obviously, I've been playing that because it's a fantastic game. It's the latest Dreamcast game to come out, and is a really cool, really highly polished indie game. So get some of that if you've not already got it for your Dreamcast. Now, Lewis, I know that you've picked up quite a few new Dreamcast games, but tell us what you've been playing on current gen first, and then tell us what you've been playing on the Dreamcast.
Yeah, I did actually play a bit of Tell Me Why, because I got an Xbox One S.
You did, yeah.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure afterwards they were like, here's the new Xbox that's coming out. But I did get to play a few really great games on there. Played Ooblets, which is kind of like a farming life simulator. Really cute game. It's in early access, so it's constantly being updated. But I did also play Tell Me Why. And similar to you, Tom, it's a very interesting game, like learning a lot from it. I'm not actually finished the first chapter. I was really into it, and then I just got distracted by another game, which I'm going to go on about. But I've also been playing through Persona 5 Royal, absolutely loving that, as I like the base game. This is just like the original, but with loads of stuff added, and all the new content is amazing. But the main game that's a big deal is Tony Hawk's Pro Skater 1 and 2.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, that little game. If you think about it, it was only revealed, what, like a few months ago? It feels like it's the time's just zipped by. Obviously, people are concerned because of the sort of shite run we've had from that series in the last, I don't know what, I suppose decade.
Yeah, but, decade.
But yeah, I held hope, and seeing a lot of early pre-release footage, and I know a lot of people got hold of that early demo as well if you pre-ordered, and everyone was saying, right, this feels great. The physics are good. The gameplay feels smooth, just like it always was. And I played it. I've completed it already. Yeah, I'm obsessed with it. It's a really absolutely stunning return to form. One of the things that sticks out mainly is just seeing these old levels, the way they've like elevated them to look so much nicer. Like, for example, the warehouse isn't sort of dingy and dark like it used to be. It's like more open windows, all the sunlight's pouring in. They've really taken advantage of this current gen's graphics to make all these old levels look great. And San Francisco from the first game, I thought, looked pretty amazing. Especially amazing if you played it on PS1 originally, where it's just all fog. So yeah. Obviously it's a mega upgrade. But yeah, I've really loved playing that. I've been loving playing some of the multiplayer as well, which I particularly like because I'm actually thrashing everyone. So that's why I like that. But yeah, also the soundtrack as well, because you got to mention that is intact, and all the extra songs I'm really loving. It's pretty cool. There's a lot of bands like Fiddler, and there's another band called Pew Pew Pew, who you can tell that they're bands who they liked this game. It's come full circle from them growing up with it and now actually having their music in the game. So it's really cool. So yeah, I know a lot of people were soured by all the old bad Tony Hawk showing, but this is definitely a return to form, so I definitely recommend it, like, wholeheartedly.
So the memory of Tony Hawk's Pro Skater 5 kind of wiped from the memory then?
Absolutely, yeah. If they continue like this, yeah, for sure.
Excellent. Do you reckon they'll do maybe 3 and 4 as well, do you think?
I think I heard in an interview where they said that if this does well, they'd probably even make a new one, you know, like a fresh new story. And obviously, I think I read on Twitter it was like the fastest selling game in the whole franchise,
yeah,
a million copies.
Well.
So yeah, that's pretty epic, really. Like, it's great that it's being appreciated by so many.
You never know. Maybe we'll see an MTV skateboarding reboot in the near future with more than 10 frames a second, maybe.
I don't know.
So what have you been playing on the old Dreamcast then, Lewis? You've been buying stuff, I hear, on the grapevine.
I have, yeah. Yeah, I've sort of picked up
by grapevine. I mean our WhatsApp group.
yeah. So I think this is probably the most I've actually bought Dreamcast wise since I first was collecting it originally, and I think it's mainly because of everything that's been going on. I've not been spending all my money on travel fare and all this and all these things, you know, I'm saving money on. So I've just thought, you know, I'll get this here and there. So I've just reel off like a quick list. I got Blue Stinger, nice. Sonic Adventure 2, Mr. Driller, Echo the Dolphin, Tony Hawk Skateboarding. That was before the new one came out. Heavy Metal, Geomatrix, I picked up and thought was a bit crap. Capcom versus SNK2, Project Justice. I got the Japanese version because of Mike's tip about the weird board game that's featured in that. And then after listening to James talk about Toy Commander, I also ordered that as well. So yeah, that's what I've picked up recently. So
that's a nice selection. Yeah.
Can you
elaborate on the weird board game, because I've got a fuzzy memory. I know the PAL version of Project Justice is like ridiculously expensive now. and the Japanese version is like the way to go for like, you know, 20 quid or something. What's this board game?
So there's a board game centered around the characters and the schools in the game, which you can play. I've no idea what's going on because it's in Japanese.
And is that not in the PAL version then?
No, it's not in the PAL version. So the PAL version had taken out, I presume, because of translation issues in terms of they couldn't afford, they didn't want to pay for the translation. But yeah, it's a bit weird. It's a bit sort of, if I remember rightly, it's been a while, but I think it's deformed versions of the characters. And sort of around the schoolyards and around all these kind of areas. And you sort of step on each some of the spaces have fights, some of the stages have, I think there's a couple of little mini games. Don't quote me on that. I think there's some little bits in there like that. It's an interesting extra. I don't think it's something which is necessarily going to be the reason you buy it for, unless you can, you know, understand what's going on. But it's certainly one of those little quirky things that was taken out of the PAL version.
Interesting. Well, Martin, you can speak Japanese, so I'm sure you could get involved in that.
Yeah, I didn't know about that. I'm sure I've got either the PAL or the Japanese version. I'll have to check and I've made a note. I'll check and get back on that.
Excellent stuff. Oh, one last thing I just want to mention, just going back to your recent reignited interest in the Saturn. I recently got my Saturn out of the attic. It wouldn't power on. It was knackered. Spoke to a friend of the podcast, Segaholic, on Twitter, at Segaholic. He's also the host of the Sega Guys podcast. He sent me his now unwanted PAL, UK PAL power board, because it would fit in my Saturn. I plugged it in, and now my Saturn's working again. So massive thank you to him. And I've now got a fully functioning Japanese Saturn that I can just plug into the mains. Don't have any games because I sold them all when I had my massive clear out. But I will endeavour to get some of the old Saturn favourites in the coming weeks and months.
At least you can use it as a sweet CD player, though. I remember doing that.
Yeah, this is true. Yeah, yeah.
That was awesome with the spaceship flying around.
Yeah, yeah.
I have like a weird memory of just that spaceship flying by as all the small things plays or something. That's the only thing I remember about that feature on the Saturn.
I remember also I was looking through some of my mum's CD collection years back when I had my initial Saturn, my original one, and realised that some of her CDs had CD and G, you know, CD and graphics.
Yeah,
so you can put those in and you can select those from the menu. And I think it was something like Gladys Knight or something. It was something really kind of not my cup of tea. But these kind of weird like teletext-style graphics come up on the screen with like lyrics and everything. It's really bizarre. If you've never tried CD in a Saturn, it's worth tracking one down just to see the weird teletext-style images that, you know, are projected onto the screen. Interesting. let's move on to some actual Dreamcast news. First things first, Dreamcast Year 2 has been fully funded. This is the Kickstarter that was put together by Andrew, one of our co-hosts and writers on the Dreamcast Junkyard. An amazing campaign, really. He was only asking for £12,000 as a goal. He actually doubled that almost. Ended at £23,104 with 892 backers. It's an amazing achievement, really. It was fully funded, was it? Was it 64 hours that it was fully funded in?
Something like that. Absolutely epic. Yeah.
Yeah, and so a lot of the stretch goals have been reached. Myself, you guys will all be contributing to the book. It's an amazing achievement, and just want to say really congratulations to Andrew for running yet another really professional and well put together campaign. Yeah, now the real work starts. Now that the campaign's been funded, and it's just really kind of a privilege to be able to be involved in one of these kind of physical, almost like coffee table books, and have our writing and our articles kind of shared and let people read them and keep them on a nice bookshelf, along with Dreamcast Year 1. Hopefully you've got that. I don't know, has he mentioned Dreamcast Year 3? Could that be a thing coming?
Well, we've had murmurs about it. I will not elaborate further, just in case.
Indeed.
Yeah, it's like a real great achievement being part of what's occurred so far. We all enjoyed the first book, but with everyone banding together behind it, with us all writing articles for it and stuff, it feels like a real big achievement for us all. It'll be an even bigger book as well as a consequence. So it feels like everything that first book achieved has sort of like doubled almost. So yeah, I'm really, really excited.
Yeah, totally. I'm just looking through the, obviously I know who's going to be involved with it. Obviously we are the Dreamcast Junkyard. Dreamcast years, but some really, really big names from the games, from the world of like gaming and retro gaming. So you got people like John Linneman from Digital Foundry. He's a well-known Dreamcast fan. He'll be involved as an interviewee. You know, Adam Korolik, Darren Jones, the editor of Retro Gamer magazine, Forbes Longdon, who is the founder of our fellow Dreamcast blog, Dreamcast Today. Ian Lee, the comedian and presenter, he'll be involved because he's, as I'm sure people know, he's a big fan of retro games and also a fan of the Dreamcast. So yeah, it's looking really exciting, to be honest, and I'm just really honoured to be a part of it, to be honest. So yeah.
And I'm looking forward personally to James Harvey, one of our fellow Dreamcast Junkyards, article in the book. It was a stretch goal which I was most happy we met.
Was that the Spirit of Speed stretch goal?
Yes, I believe it's a comprehensive, the most comprehensive in the history of the world review and look at one of the classic games.
Yes, I cannot wait for that. That should be good. Okay, let's move on. Dreamcast has turned 21 in the US. It can now drink legally in the United States. Can it own a gun? Is that something that you can do in the States?
I'm sure people screaming at us. I wondered. I think you can get a gun much earlier than that, can't you?
I thought most Americans were born with a gun. I just thought you could have a gun as a child. I don't know. So yeah, Dreamcast is now 21 years old. It's mad to think that 21 years since the launch of this this console that we still sit here and talk about with such affection and love and in Mike's case knowledge. We had an article on the Dreamcast Junkyard recently by one of our compatriots from the Saturn Junkyard. Brian Vines wrote a really, really good retrospective on all of the Dreamcast games that launched on that fateful day, 9/9/99. So he has a look through all of the US launch titles. It's pretty cool. And I was quite surprised by the one that he chose as his favourite. I won't spoil it. If you want to see it, go to the Dreamcast Junkyard main blog, www.dreamcastjunkyard.co.uk. You'll find it. It'll be there. Just search around for articles around this time, September 2020, and you'll find it. But cool article.
Always enjoy reading Brian's articles because Brian is one of the most articulate people I think I've ever seen on the internet. He's a master of wordcraft.
I agree.
Very, very good. Very, really enjoyable. We do lots of articles that are enjoyable. We all, it's all enjoyable on a blog, but Brian's articles are like a fine wine, just drink it in as he writes it. And I'm not being sarcastic either. He is genuinely a fantastic writer.
Yeah. In a day of kind of fast media and social interaction and flicking through Instagram and just, consuming everything so quickly, I think that's a nice analogy, Mike. Because you want to take your time and read it all. So, recommended article for sure.
Even if his order is completely wrong.
Yes. Okay, let's move on to our initial thoughts, or rather Martin's initial thoughts, on a piece of hardware that we've been sent for review. Still waiting for that review, Martin, but I'll give you the benefit of the doubt. We are in uncertain times. It's a weird year, 2020. We've got other things to be thinking about. But what are your initial thoughts Let me back up. Martin, explain to us what it is first, and then give us your thoughts.
Nice. Yeah, so we've been given a kind of demo unit, or I guess it's a full production unit anyway, for sampling and trying out, and it's the Brook Wingman SD. And I was wondering what the SD stood for, whether it was standard definition or sexy device or something like this. And then I thought it might be Saturn Dreamcast. That would make sense. Because it is a converter system which you plug into the front of your Dreamcast. And there's of course, you can also do the same with your Saturn, but there's already articles and videos on this. So my task is to do the same for the Dreamcast. And you plug it into the front of your Dreamcast, then there's an array of ports on the device that allow you to plug in all sorts of modern controllers, which I find particularly interesting because I haven't backed any of these Kickstarters and other campaigns and all this other stuff about getting these kind of retro gamers and all this, controllers that are made today for the Dreamcast, for the old system. There's a whole load of stuff out there. I've never really been that interested in it. I actually enjoy and like the old Dreamcast controller, but I do prefer, using controls of today. They're just ergonomically a lot better. Now, I'm not going to start getting into arguments over whether the PS4 or Xbox is more more comfortable. I think we probably all agree with that, but the PlayStation is very slowly edging its design from the very original PlayStation controller. If you put them next to each other, they look very similar. As if you get the old Duke or whatever it's called, this massive Xbox thing for large hands, then it looks very different to what we've got today. And my personal favorite controller actually is the 360 controller. That I think for me, for my hands, is just, and probably the amount of time I played with it, is just perfect. The new Xbox One and everything like this, they've also got very good controllers too. But the point is here with this, you can actually plug in all of this or use wireless. It's got Bluetooth connection and allows you to use dongles as well. You can plug in all sorts of stuff. You can see on the website, brookaccessory.com.
Did not know that. Interesting.
And yeah, I tested it with quite a few things. So I have a wired 360 controller, which was a pleasure to use. It's got a really long cable, and then I'm kind of playing Dreamcast as if I'm just using a much nicer controller because it's wired. I also tried it with wireless controllers, so an Xbox One controller as well as a PS3 and a PS4 controller, just to test that they all work, and they all work fine and were extremely easy to pair, considering I didn't even open the instruction manual. I wanted to treat it as if I'd actually bought it and not look at the manual and just plug it in, turn things on and just see how it goes, and just and then complain if it doesn't work because I haven't even looked at the manual and all this kind of stuff. In terms of hardware, it's small, it feels well made enough, it's not imposing, it's a little dongle, it's the life of the dongle now. You've got one port anywhere on your phone, and then you have to have 13 million or your laptop and 13 million dongles sticking out of it. There's a little LED on it that blinks to tell you all sorts of stuff, but to be honest, as I said, I didn't look at that, and just it was either working or it wasn't.
Can I ask a question just quickly? Sure. How do you use a VMU? Do you have to have like controller 2 plugged in with the VMU stuck into it? Or?
Well, this is part of, I would say, this is the cherry on top that I didn't realise, even though it's written on the box, is that you get 200 blocks of memory built in.
Wow.
So it's a VMU inside, which is superb because that means you can actually just use that plus whatever controller, and you don't have to muck around looking for a second controller and plug that into. Of course, all that works. The Dreamcast actually just recognizes this as a controller with a VMU, so that's how it appears in the dashboard, and all your other controllers and VMUs appear as they normally do. I didn't try and enable kind of another VMU in controller one, so I guess you can only have one in controller one, but you've got your 200 blocks there, and that you can move and transfer everything as you normally would with a Dreamcast, which is really nice. Of course, there's no little screen and all this kind of stuff, but I think the memory capacity is a really nice touch that they didn't have to do, because, no other controller that I'm aware of is being released today does that. Some of them have a VMU slot, which, of course, is cool. I've been playing with the hardware of this. So I've tried all these controllers and they all work fine. So I tried it with a few games to see how it was. Tried some fighting games. All the controllers that I tried, I really didn't experience any lag whatsoever. Now, I like to think that I'm into the whole lag thing, not as much as some people I know. This comes from me playing a lot of shmups, mostly on the 360 and Saturn. So lag is just, if you're playing a shoot 'em up and you need to move your ship because there's bullets coming, that few frames of lag can just literally kill you. It kills the little ship that you're controlling. Same with fighting games. I absolutely suck at fighting games. Probably all time, my favorite fighting game is Soul Calibur because you can play that with your eyes shut. But in terms of lag, again, unnoticeable, but I haven't got any hardware actual tests for that. The most fun wasn't actually with those, though. It was with games like Crazy Taxi, where I was using just a nicer controller, to be honest, to drive around, more ergonomic controller. Sega Rally 2 as well, that was good fun. But the real eye-opener for me was Unreal Tournament and Quake. Absolute game-changer, this, because you know how everyone online is saying you've got two schools of thought, really. You've got the Dreamcast controller with its one analog stick. Then you've got, well, okay, we should make a controller, but we'll keep it of the era and just have one stick. And then you've got people who want the two sticks. For sure, I'm a complete convert now and would say, if you're going to make a new controller, it's got to have two sticks. But to be honest, if you're going to make a new controller, that's up to you and everything, and I'm going to be recommending this thing because it's brilliant. You're going to have other controllers kicking around anyway. Moving around in Quake and Unreal Tournament just as you normally would now.
So do you use a second stick, do you, as a controller?
Yeah, you just assign in the menus for Unreal and Quake, you can just assign what buttons do what. So you can just have strafe and move forward and backwards instead of being Y, A, and B and X. You can change that. You just move the second stick and it will come up as, I can't remember now, some kind of
X and Y axis kind of thing.
Yeah, something like that. And it just automatically assigns it. And that took about 10 seconds. Again, didn't read a manual, just tried it out, and it worked really well. So I can be terrible at Quake with dual analog sticks. So it's also got all sorts of other stuff like turbo functions and things like this, which again would be really good for shmups and things like this. There are certain shmups where you know, proper old school, where you're tapping the button, can just be a bit of a joke sometimes. So a turbo is really nice for that. You can also do full remap and things like this. So yeah, I thought it was fantastic, and it comes in at £40 or so on Amazon, €50 thereabouts, and $45. And for me, I give it a full endorsement, and I'll be putting up an article soon, especially now I've said this on the podcast. That article needs to go up pretty quickly.
Wow, pretty comprehensive sort of chat there about that. I assumed that it was just for arcade sticks. I didn't realise that you could kind of pair other things to it. That sounds amazing.
I should actually add, so I've known Brooke for a few years. I have their multi arcade stick support system board inside my Sega Virtua Arcade Pro stick or whatever it's called. I can't remember now. It's in the other room. And it's brilliant. It's zero lag. And I use that on my Switch, PS4, 360, the same controller on each for all of the shmups that I play and love it. So I know the company. They've got a great name in terms of low lag. And yeah, this is I also use that controller through it as well. And yeah, it's not just arcade. This can change your whole Dreamcast collection. Can now be played with a nice ergonomic analog stick with 200 blocks of memory and wireless as well. This is the big thing. You can sit the other side of the room and play, finally, you know.
Yeah. Amazing, that's really cool.
I've played it as well. I bought one on Amazon Prime, actually.
Okay.
I echo everything Martin said. I bought it mainly for Quake, because I'm a massive Quake fan, a massive Unreal Tournament fan, and, you know, it's great to get a keyboard and mouse out, and ultimately that is always the best way to play first-person shooters. But, you know, let's be realistic. Most of us don't have the space to have keyboards and mice out for our consoles. And playing it is complete and utter game changer. I played Quake 3 for probably good solid most of the time for 2 days. Probably got further in the Dreamcast version than I've ever got in the Dreamcast version, to be honest with you. It's fantastic. It's so good. It really is worth the money.
Wow, so a shining review then for the Brook. Was it called the Brook?
The Brook Wingman SD.
Brook Wingman SD, yeah. So I'm just looking at the website. So it's brookaccessory.com. That's where you can find this thing. Obviously, all the links will be in the review or the article once you do it.
Yeah, I mean, their main shop actually is just straight through Amazon anyway in Europe, UK, and worldwide. Yeah, they have all sorts of other stuff as well, which I won't go into now. But they make good products. It's their circuitry is it's pretty good. So I think it will stand the test of time quite well. Which isn't everything that can be said for the other controllers. Looking around the internet and seeing some of these other controllers cracking and all sorts of other things.
Excellent stuff. Right, let's move on from the Brook Wingman to some software. Dreamcast, new Dreamcast games coming from Josh Prod. Mike, do you want to talk to us a little bit about these new releases? Because they release them in waves, don't they, Josh Prod? So this is, what, the fifth wave now of new Dreamcast
fifth
games?
Wave. Yeah, so it's the fifth wave of games. They've hinted at previous games will be appearing in future waves in the past. I think last time on the fourth wave, they sort of released screenshots and box covers. Then it ended up being a completely different set of games. So this time they've announced all at once. And six games have been announced, which I think is the most they've announced in one wave so far.
I think you're right. Yeah, it is.
Yeah. So the games are an interesting bunch of games. So I'll go through them very quickly. So Alice Sisters, Rocketron, Cetasius Next or Cetasius Next.
Yeah, I thought Cetasius.
I think it's, I'm not quite sure. It's one of those words that, you know, is made up.
like Haagen-Dazs.
hopefully they haven't got speech in the game and therefore, you know, ruin what I've said in the podcast. Tough Guy, Supercharged Robot Volcazer, and Wolflame, which I know we've touched upon on the podcast before.
We have.
It's an interesting bunch of games for several reasons. It's very shooter heavy, but not all vertical or horizontal shoot 'em ups. It's sort of a bit of a run and gun in sort of multi-directional shooters in there as well. So it's certainly an interesting bunch of games, and also a platformer and also a fighting game, which is, I think, a welcome addition to the Dreamcast's indie library.
Is that Tough Guy?
It is Tough Guy, yeah. So I'll very, very quickly touch upon them. There is also two other games as well, which I'll go into in a minute. It's a bit, it's not complicated, but it's a little bit more drawn out than it should be. So the six games that we announced, the first is Alice Sisters, which is by Orion Soft. It's a sequel to Alice Mom's Rescue, which came out a few years ago. I'm a big fan of Orion. I think he's done some really, really good, cheerful, colourful games. Escape 2042 is one of the best indie games on a Dreamcast, and it's gone under the radar quite heavily. I'm looking forward to that. It's, I think, getting a Mega Drive release as well.
I thought that Orion Soft had quit doing Dreamcast games. Did he quit and then come back?
Yeah, I didn't hear that he'd come back. I think there was at one point he was going to do a development suite for the Dreamcast. I don't think it got a huge amount of attention at the time, so I think he's dropped out. He's come back. I welcome his return to the indie scene.
Oh, totally.
It's, you know, it's not... Some people are going to complain about the fact it's a 2D platformer, but I don't really care. If the game's good fun, if the game's designed well, and by the screenshots, it looks amazing. I think it's a great addition to our lineup. Moving on from our sisters, we have Rocketron. Now,
It's a great name.
Also, what a fantastic cover. Yeah. Check out the cover on the website. It's a fantastic 80s sci-fi, you know, the sort of cover that you'd get from an 80s Amiga game.
It looks like Turrican or something.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, it's definitely. And actually, the actual game itself. So a lot of these games are by Astroport, a Japanese developer who's been releasing games on PCs for several years now. And a lot of Josh Squad games are from Astroport. I think we had Armed 7 in the past, which is a shooter. Rocketron is a game which came out this year on Steam. So it's actually a really new game for that platform. And it's an interesting mix. It's not a shmup. It's not a shoot 'em up. It is a game which I would describe as, from the look of it, more close to Bangai-O and that style of game. Mm-hmm. It is a side-scrolling action shooter, and it looks fantastic. It really does look like a game which is going to be a real different genre for Dreamcast Indie Library. I don't think I can think of anything really like it at the current time. I suppose Gunlord is relatively close to it, but in a different sort of style. More Turrican-esque, I suppose.
Yeah, there's some massive boss fights, it looks like. Some massive boss battles.
Yeah. Yeah, awesome bosses. If it runs well, it's going to be a really, really good addition to the library. It's got fantastic reviews on Steam as well. A lot of the Astroport games have really, really high scores on Steam. I know that's not necessarily a benchmark which you should be looking at too much, because obviously it's an indie game, it's a small developer, so people who are going to be supporting the game are going to be more positive. However, I think it's a game which definitely keep an eye out for and could be very interesting indeed. Moving on to a more traditional type of game from Astroport, is Cetasius Next. This came out about 9 years ago on Steam, and this is a horizontal shooter. It is a traditional type of horizontal shooter, very much in the Gradius R-type model. Mm-hmm. It looks good. Again, a game with great reviews on Steam. It's been released as part of Pixel Heart's Shmup collection for the Wii U and Switch. If no one's familiar with it, they released a... I think it was advertised as the last game published on the Wii U, but also on the Switch as well. So it has a few games in there.
Wasn't it? It was a physical game, wasn't it? It was like, that's why there was a big sort of hoo-ha about it, yeah.
Yeah, it was a physical game, and it got quite a bit of a response. A lot of the publications covered it, Nintendo Life and things like that. Mm. And it had some good reviews. So again, a game which has got a good pedigree and looks like it could be a good addition to the lineup.
Nice.
Very briefly, I also touch on another game from Astroport as part of this wave, which is Supercharged Robot Volcazer. Caused a bit of confusion online because people thought it was finally the version of the anime side-scrolling game, which was coming out a couple of years ago, whose name escapes me now, but the game based on an
Star
old Sheriffs. Cartoon.
Is it Star Sheriffs?
That's the one, yeah, Star Sheriffs. So I think people thought it was that. It's not that. It's actually a 13-year-old game, which Astroport released on PCs. It is another side-scrolling horizontal shoot-em-up. It is pretty much what you'd expect from that kind of indie 2D shooter game. Again, could be very, very good. It's got good reviews on Steam. It's been well-received, so that's good. I won't touch much about Wolfflame, because I know Martin covered it in a previous podcast.
Yeah, we talked about that a while, didn't we? A while back.
Yeah, vertical shooter. I know there was some issues with the run-in speed at the time. I also will touch on the last one of the six, though, which is Tough Guy. Let's face it, it's got quite a generic title. It's actually a Taiwanese fighting game. It's a follow-up from the same developers the game Sango Fighter, which is infamous. Well, it's infamous as being a game which was released on the Super Acan.
Oh, right, yeah,
Taiwanese console back in the 1990s. Mm-hmm. It is a Street Fighter 2 model fighting game. It's very, very much what you'd expect, but it has got a couple of weird things. You can regen your health during the actual bout, which is certainly interesting. And so again, you know, fighters are a genre which Dreamcast has got a great library anyway. We've had Breakers a couple of years ago, which I actually quite enjoyed Breakers. I know that some people didn't think it was, you know, a top level fighting game, but let's face it, it's an indie game. It's not necessarily going to be at the same level as Capcom vs. SNK. It's an enjoyable 2D fighter. So that's the six games that were announced. On top of that, there's also an Astroport collection, which is a four-game collection, which will include Satanius Next and Wolfling, but also include Gigantic Army and Zangiki Whoop, which are two more Astroport games, both released, I believe, on Switch and Steam. Again, one's a side-scrolling platform shooter, that's for Gigantic Army, very much in the sort of 90s style, again, Turrican-inspired. And Zangiki Whoop is a horizontal shooter.
These names are brilliant. Gigantic Army, Zangiki Whoop.
At least we'll not forget the names, I suppose. It's, it's a bit less generic than Tough Guy. I think, you know, side-scrolling shooter too wouldn't necessarily be the same thing. So that's the games. I mean, it's a very interesting lineup. We all, Junkyard's always supported indie scene. We always supported more games coming. I think... I've already made a nemesis online because I mentioned this in the article I posted on Dreamcast Junkyard, and someone didn't like it. But we have to be realistic. These games are retailing for £35 each. These games are available for £4 on Steam. They're available for a lot less than £25, £35 on Switch as well. It is a lot of money. I think in total you look at it over £300 to buy these games.
Wow, yeah.
We talked about Dreamcast Premium before. We've talked about, you know, a Dreamcast Premium is...
It's almost like Switch tax, isn't it? But a little bit more eye-watering.
Exactly, and I think it's very difficult for us as people who... We love Dreamcast, we support Dreamcast. We also don't want people to be ripped off. Yeah. Now, these games could actually be fantastic. I think all eight are really appealing to me. I actually am looking forward to all eight. I have bought all eight myself as well. So I am really looking forward. But there's no doubt in the fact that you can get all these games. If it's just the game itself you're after to experience, it costs £20-30 on Steam. to get all of them. And that's not throwing in the extra, you know, extra cover versions, different regions. It's a shame, because I think if it had been priced slightly lower, and we know they have done that before, so Volgar the Viking was released by Josh Pod at a lower price point of $19.99. If they had done it at that price point, I would be unequivocally here saying, get them, go to the website now and buy them. Unfortunately, I can't, in good conscience, say that. I have to say, look, you have to make a decision yourselves, and do you really want to spend that much money on games which might not be the pinnacle of gaming that you want for $34.90? I think Ross made a comment on the podcast a couple of years ago now, and he said that if indie developers want to price games at full price and want to get, you know, make their game to be a big game, a big name and lots of publicity, they have to realise they also have to be judged the same way we judge normal games.
Yeah.
We can't just give them a free pass because they have made a game for a Dreamcast.
Yeah, totally.
I think it's, we have to be realistic. So it's a little bit disappointing, but I think the lineup is interesting, say the least.
It seems a bit weird that you can only get Zangeki, Warp and Gigantic Army on that one collection. Like, what if you wanted Cetasius next and Wolflame? You know, because, I mean, half of the reason why people buy these, you know, is cool to play it on the Dreamcast. So probably a lot of people will want the actual physical individual games. But then they're basically saying, well, to get these other two, you've got to buy a collection with two of the others already on it. Seems a bit strange, that. I don't know.
It's an odd move, yeah. It's an odd move.
Yeah, I think that's an odd move, and I think it's a good point about kind of if you want to move up to the next level, you've got to be prepared to be judged by the, you know, by that same tier, if you like. So, for example, it's exactly as you were saying. I played the demo of Wolfflame, and or the beta or whatever you want to call it, and I would be interested in it if it ran as well as the Steam version did. Now, the Steam version is €6. And on Dreamcast, it's going to be €35. And it's not a new game that they've made. And I'm not saying that significant work doesn't go into porting things, but, you know, there's an extra €30 premium. For 27 or €28, you can get the Astro Saga 7 game bundle, which includes half of these unpronounceable games that you've just mentioned, Mike. Yeah, that's €27. And of course, this isn't, you don't get the physical stuff, and I'm willing to pay a premium to get the physical thing. And I think that's absolutely fine. But yeah, I think this is a bit of a reach here. There's no kind of added content that I'm aware of at the moment, at least. And, you know, it's
I think it's worth saying as well that the bar has been raised. Xenocrisis is, I know I wrote a review which was waxing lyrical about it, but I have Xenocrisis is an absolutely fantastic game. I've played it on the Xbox One Game Pass now as well. It is an absolutely superb game, and I think that's raised the bar. Stormwind did the same thing a couple of years ago. I think we were used to Hucast bring out these shooters that were okay, but actually they were a little bit, you know, repetitive because they were the same game pretty much every single time. Stormwind raised the bar to such a high level. And then there's Xenocrisis come along, done the same thing again. Now, I've looked at some of the videos on some of these games that Josh Potter released in. I've had a look at some of the bits. They actually look, if they run at a good speed, exactly what Martin said, the demo for the beta for Wolfflame didn't run at a great frame rate. I've played the demo or the beta for Tough Guy. It also had some issues with slowdown, which in a fighting game is pretty much going to kill the game. If it can get rid of that slowdown, some of these games, especially Rockatron, are absolutely superb. I mean, they are going to be incredibly good fun. I have no issue whatsoever with paying the full price. But if it's got slowed down as well, then you're paying 10 times the amount for a game you can play at full speed on an old PC on Steam. And I think that it would be disingenuous of ourselves to not point this out. Now, I know that I've had some responses. I've had a couple of responses into email as well. Thank you for doing that, people, saying that I was in some way against Josh Pod. I mean, I don't really care if people think that, but it's obviously not what we're trying to say. We are quite clearly saying that we love the fact that games are coming to the Dreamcast, but we're not going to just sit here and go spend all your money on games because you're collecting and you have to have them. It's not like that. We should be supporting the games that are really good. If Josh Broad can get these games out and they're running at full speed and they're running well, we will be the first people to praise them for it.
Absolutely. We're here to praise the games and to look at the games, not to say if you want to get a full set, because I can spend, you know, the next few days to make up some box art and, you know, do something and sell you something and call it a full set. So it's not about that. It's a different mentality. You mentioned Xenocrisis. Two questions. One, how much does that cost on Dreamcast and can you still buy it? That's one question.
Yes, you can still buy it. I don't know how much because I kickstarted it, but I believe it's 30.
I think you're right, Mike. Yeah, it is. Yeah.
Well, I was going to say if it's under 50, I've not played it actually. I really should. I think I might get that as my next Dreamcast game. But that's the kind of thing, having seen quite a lot about it online, that would be something that I would be prepared to pay perhaps a bit more than 30 for. So I think that's a really good price anyway to hear. And what an amazing game. Question two, Mike, for you actually, because I don't have this yet, is have you tried it with the Brook Wingman SD? Because now you can have dual stick.
I haven't, only because of the fact that I got the twin sticks for Dreamcast.
Of course you have.
But yeah. I've played... But if it, because there's no reason why it won't play the exact same way as Xenocrisis on the Xbox One plays. And if it runs, if it plays like that, I mean, I'll say it now, actually, as an amendment to my review. If it plays using the same controls as the Xbox One controller, it is the best controlling game on the Dreamcast because it is so smooth. In fact, Martin's pointing out a very good thing there. If you can use it on the Brook, then that's an even better reason to get the Brook.
Wow, that is high praise indeed. That's been a really nice and concise look down the new Josh Prod games, Mike. For those people who want to see that in text form, you can find that on the Dreamcast Junkyard main blog. If we can move on, maybe pivot slightly from the best controlling game on the Dreamcast, as per Mike's waxing lyrical, to possibly one of the worst controlling games on the Dreamcast in Shenmue.
We'll come at me.
This is the news that the Shenmue Undub has been released, the definitive version by Phantom Riverstone and Shenmue Master. Now, for those people who don't know, the original PAL version of Shenmue released with a rather... divisive audio track with the great Corey Marshall voicing Ryo Hazuki. And
I was just doing an impression, sorry.
Looking for sailors, yeah. So Shenmue released with the Corey Marshall mix, as we'll call it. So what this is, the Shenmue Undub Definitive Version, is they've taken the first game, the PAL version, and they've undubbed it, as the name suggests. So they've taken the English voice track off it and put the Japanese voice track on it with English subtitles, because some people prefer that. I prefer to have it in English, but you know, people want the original, more sort of authentic Japanese voice acting, I suppose. And this has been released today, I believe, 16th of September. And it's quite a big deal for the Shenmue community. I know that Phantom Riverstone, which is a website that is all about Shenmue, massively in-depth Shenmue translation articles, little quirks, differences between versions, really, really good fan website, phantomriverstone.com, have published this today. So a couple of the sort of differences in this new Shenmue Undub that you can expect to find if you download this this ROM and put it onto a CDR to play in your Dreamcast, it can be played in a Dreamcast, is that it's apparently it's based on a thing called the Kagami Undub, which was an earlier fan-made undub version. It's got full English subtitles, so the official translated lines are used where available. A small number of the Japanese spoken lines, around 3%, which did not have English equivalent translations available, have been translated by hand. And a few small corrections were also made to fix specific lines that had incorrect grammar or meaning. So this just tells you the amount of effort that's gone into this. This is really a labour of love, I think, from the Shenmue fan community. If anything, they can be called really sort of they get down to the bones of what they're trying to do. And this is just a great example of that. So they've got the full Japanese audio with no downsampling, PAL compatible save files. So saves can be carried over to the PAL version of Shenmue 2. That's pretty cool. CDDA audio tracks included, so recorded audio tracks players expected during the game. The music that plays when Ryo rides home from the harbour with Nozomi on the back of his motorcycle, for example. Full Coca-Cola branding. The branding for the vending machines and soda cans in the game shows the Coca-Cola branding as seen in the Japanese version of Shenmue. And just a host of other small fixes for small glitches identified in previous undubbed versions. So conversations when Ryo knocked on the house doors did not play out properly. I am reading this all from the website, by the way, phantomriverstone.com. And, of course, this all now fits on standard CDR discs. So the images have been streamlined to allow them to be played on a Dreamcast console using a standard CDR with no missing or cut content. So, I mean, hats off to the guys who've done this. It's really impressive.
Mm.
I'll be the first to say I'm not the biggest Shenmue fan, but I know when a labour of love like this comes along, you know, it's taken this long people to do this. Any thoughts on that, Lewis?
I remember hearing his Adam Korolik. I think now you're saying that there was an older project this is based on. I think it was he covered that. So I remember I watched a video years ago where he was like, check out this footage of Shenmue playing with Japanese voices and English subtitles. Mm. And I remember like thinking, oh, this is like, that's so cool. Because I, you know, I really love Shenmue 2. And one of the things I did love about Shenmue 2 was that it had Japanese voices. Because don't get me wrong, I love the sort of endearing, silly voice acting of the first Shenmue. But I don't know, like the game is pretty serious, really. It's a game about a guy avenging his dead father. And I don't know, there's just something about the English voice acting, while great in places, you know, Corey Marshall's fantastic. I think, remember Nozomi being a good voice actress as well, kind of took me out a little bit. So I really liked the sort of more authentic Japanese voices. I sound like one of them, like pompous anime fans now. So I was like really intrigued about this project when Adam showed it off. So, but obviously then the remasters came out and kind of sorted all that out, because obviously you can choose which dub you want. Yep. But it's really cool that if you want to put it on your Dreamcast, that's obviously a choice now. And also there's sort of an incentive to play, because obviously you've got the added cool things, you know, like the glitch fixes, the Coca-Cola branding, just little extras there that's kind of makes it a little bit more of an extra reason to play it, I suppose. Yeah, so it's really cool that something like this even exists. So awesome.
Yeah, I'm just looking at the article on Phantom Riverstone now. It looks like there's even some kind of bespoke box art as well that you can download and put onto your onto your CDs. So that's really, really quite cool, to be honest. Do you remember a couple of years ago, there was a Dead or Alive 2, like, Ultimate Edition for the Dreamcast, where it had loads of additional content put into it and you could burn it onto a disc? It's kind of similar to that, really, isn't it? Or the Frame Gride. Frame Gride had an English version, didn't it, put onto a disc and playing a Dreamcast.
And Advanced War, one of the Advanced War strategy games had it as well.
Okay. Mm. Yeah,
I think it's really good, in that more and more games as we go forward are going to be kind of hacked and tweaked like this. It's kind of, having no experience in doing this whatsoever, it's kind of a bit magical to me, really, to kind of dive in and do all this. It's like the Sega Gaga translations and all this kind of stuff. When you get into the game, you add things, you fix things, you move things around from other stuff. I think it's really impressive. And as you said earlier, Tom, it's kind of a labour of love, and the Shenmue community is huge. I remember this game fondly. As Lewis was saying, it's, for me, it's one of those games where I'm also a bit of an anime snob. It's nice to really immerse yourself. Well, I also speak, I'll just throw that out there, I speak Japanese as well, of course. So, but it, even before I spoke Japanese, I was playing Shenmue. And when you play in that kind of environment, you just feel more immersed, because there's nothing about Shenmue that looks like anywhere in Europe. So it just fits nicely, and everything else they've added, I just think, is superb. So yeah, hats off to them, impressive work.
Indeed. Yeah, so you can find that at phantomriverstone.com. Give that a download and play it in your Dreamcast, as it was meant to be played, some may say. Not Corey Marshall, though, I'm sure. Okay, moving away from Shenmue, let's move to another new game, which is coming out very soon. This is a game called Summoning Signals. This is a very bizarre looking game, so it's right up my street. It looks like a point and click. We have mentioned it on the podcast in the near past, or recent past, should I say. This is a game that uses, is it telegrammetry? I believe it's called photogrammetry. It uses the same kind of technique that Google Maps uses, where it turns all of the buildings into like 3D representations using some kind of algorithm. And what they've done is they've taken photographs of actual real world like locations and objects and turned them into this kind of bizarre, almost warped version of reality. So your mission is to find the parts of a downed spacecraft and kind of get off the planet. But there's a slightly supernatural edge to it as well. And it's an interesting game. We don't get many indie points and clicks on the Dreamcast. And this game is from the same people that created the rather intriguing Reappear Recycle, which was another demo that we spoke about on a previous episode, where you play as kind of like a disembodied spirit in a lab or an alchemist's library, trying to find out, you know, what's happened. Pretty impenetrable. I know that some of the guys here finished it. I didn't because I'm too thick. But this game, Summoning Signals, looks like it's going to be kind of going down the same route, but you have to like use technology to find your bits of spaceship, scanning pieces of the environment, solving puzzles, riddles, that kind of stuff. It looks like a very odd game. Like I say, it's something that appeals to me hugely. I know there was a demo released very recently to commemorate the Dreamcast's 21st birthday, as we spoke about earlier on in the show, but it had nothing to do with the actual game. It was a kind of bizarre, almost Monty Python-esque shmup where you had to shoot a two-headed serpent thing that would reel off quotes from Soul Calibur, which, you know, sounds as bizarre as it actually is. Yeah, so that was a nice little demo. Bit odd, like I say, but what else to say? It's weird.
I'd like to give my thoughts on the demo, if I may.
Please, the floor is yours, Lewis. The floor is yours.
So I played this thinking it would be like PT or something, you know, like you beat the dragon and then it's like, here's the Summoning Signals teaser or something. But you just beat.
What's PT?
You know the demo that Kojima did for Silent Hills.
Not clearly.
What? What? Wait. Sorry, Lewis. We'll stop. Wait a minute. Mike.
I've never played Silent Hill in my life.
Yeah, but you've never heard of PT, the like weird looping demo that he created for the PS4.
Not a clue.
I've
slipped out of my PS4.
Yeah, I'm either having a stroke or a memory.
Sorry, Lewis.
I don't know which.
Completely derailed your train of thought. I apologise, but Mike, sort your head out. You need to know what PT is. Anyway,
I remember that.
I'll look into it.
I don't blame him, seeing as he can't bloody play it anymore because Konami are bastards. But yeah, So I beat the dragon and nothing happened. It just was, you just fight the dragon again, and it took me like an hour to beat him because it's really difficult.
It's difficult.
Yeah, and so I kind of was like, oh, that was cool.
That's an hour I'll never get back.
Yeah, that doesn't mean I don't. Obviously, like I'm really looking forward to Summoning Signals, but I kind of just played this game where you kill a dragon and that was it.
It's just weird.
But in fairness, you can kind of summarize most games like Wipeout 2048 or whatever. You know,
you just fly it.
I just drove around laps.
Yeah.
Just did lap after lap. Nothing changed, you know.
Yeah, Legend of Zelda. Yeah. I just saved the world and traveled through time. Yeah.
Spoilers. Yeah.
Oh yeah. So sorry. Spoiler alert. So Summoning Signals. It's got its own website now, which is summoningsignals.com. Go on there. You can have a look at some of the nice screenshots of the main game, and also a nice GIF or GIF even of the bizarre dragon demo. I believe there is a full demo of the game coming out in the near future where you can actually see some of this really nice graphical effect, photogrammetry.
Go back. GIF?
Mike, come on,
is that how we pronounce it?
Wait, you don't know about PT, and now you don't know about the
pronunciation of GIF. It's GIF, surely. It's GIF.
No, the guy who created GIFs or GIFs came out a couple of years ago saying that it should be pronounced GIF, as in like lemon GIF.
I'm saying it's GIF. I ain't saying GIF. That's a cleaning liquid.
Is this episode, Mike, like, has old arguments from like the last 20 years that we've all gone through already?
I mean, I touched on the last few weeks. I feel like I went to some kind of weird universe where everything's changed.
This one, there's a massive pandemic and everyone's stuck in one room for months.
Fuck yeah, on that one. Yeah,
cool. Okay.
Damn it. Okay.
Mike's been in lockdown since March 2015.
Okay. Yes.
Just want to add about summoning signals. I think this is a really cool one for the Dreamcast, because obviously a lot of the ones we're seeing are kind of like redos of something that the Dreamcast already does pretty well, I suppose. Not to say they're not great in their own right, but this is something really, truly quite different. That's why we all seem to be very eager for it. So
that demo, the Repeat Recycle. Early in the year, that got us all quite excited. I think I remember all playing it, even though it wasn't, a very long demo. Just something a bit different. I mean, I think that's one of the things I mentioned about indie games early on. For the Dreamcast indie scene to survive, for the Dreamcast indie scene to flourish 21 years after the Dreamcast, it needs to have some real difference and some different genres and some real freshness put into it. Mm. And I think this is one of the games which is going to do that.
Yeah, and don't forget, we've still got things like Xenocider coming in the near future. We've got Arcade Racing Legends coming soon.
Yes.
There's one other, it's the one from, the side-scrolling beat-em-up with the moves that you can do. I'm talking rubbish. It's got a female character.
It's on the tip of my tongue. Intrepid Izzy.
That's it. That's the one.
Nice, yes. Nice.
And there are several more as well. There's, I think everyone needs to keep their eyes out in the next couple of months. There's going to be some pretty big announcements for indie games on Dreamcast.
Ooh, right.
So I think it's extremely impressive. Us. If you'd have told me about this 20 years ago, that the Dreamcast, of course, when it was dying, or 19 years ago, and it's all done and dusted, and Sega, they're not making hardware. If you'd have told me that people will be making games, and there'll be a few games released per year, it's amazing. It's absolutely amazing.
Let me ask you this, Martin. Let me ask you this. If I could go back in time and tell you one of two things 20 years ago, there's going to be new Dreamcast games in 2020, or the world will be on the verge of collapse in 2020. Which one would you rather know?
I would want to hear all about these lovely Dreamcast games.
Yeah. Correct. Correct.
Yeah. That's what we need to. That's what we need to hear about. Yeah.
Okay. Right. We have waffled on for quite some time now, so I think that brings us very nicely to a natural close of the episode. I'd like to thank you, our listeners, for sticking with us for 82 or 83 or 84 episodes, if you count the ones that we didn't number. And, of course, to you, my co-hosts, Mike, where can people find you on the internet at large?
So they can find me at my slightly baffling Twitter account, which is at DreamcastPix. Dreamcast, P-I-C-S, which is just me basically showing my collection because I'm boring.
I don't know what PT is.
I don't know what PT is. I don't know what the fuck a PT is.
I'm going to start one. I'm going to start one called Mike doesn't know what PT is.
Kojima, who I presume is some kind of famous games developer, is making summoning signals. I don't know. That's what I got from it anyway.
Actually made Google Maps.
And he uses GIF. Fuck those.
Martin, where can people find you, if they can find you, that is?
My Sega collection, or Sega collection, I can't remember now, that's for game content, and I'm going to pimp my other one, Just Mini Disc on Instagram, if you're into mini discs or can remember what they are, you can hassle me on that.
Lewis, where can people find you, apart from obviously the Dreamcast Junkyard Twitter account?
You can find me on at LewisJFC on Twitter, and also you can read my stuff also, as well as on the Dreamcast Junkie. You can read it on altmaguk.net. May have a Tony Hawk review coming to put down all my thoughts that I kind of waffled on about today.
Excellent stuff. Previously mentioned, you can find us all as a collective on Twitter at the DC Junkyard. You can find our main blog, website, whatever you want to call it, at www.thedreamcastjunkyard.co.uk. You can find us on pretty much all of the different social media sites. Just type Dreamcast Junkyard, you'll find us. And yeah, you can't find me anymore because I've deleted my Twitter account again because I'm just a bit weird. That's it.
Yeah. Every now and then you think, oh, I'm going to go back on Twitter. Yeah, everyone keeps talking about it. You go on for like 2 weeks and it drives you insane. Yeah. And then you have to delete it all and throw your phone away and just hide. Yeah. You'll be back on in like a month.
Oh yeah, it'll be less than a month, mate. Don't worry about that. It'll be less than a month. And I'll be off it again by this. Then I'll be off it again in 2 weeks. But yeah, thank you to our listeners for listening to us waffle on. And yeah, please join us on the next episode of Dreamcast Junkyard Dream Pod, whenever that may be. Goodbye.
Please stop this disc now.
I was going to go into a story about how Motorcycle Emptiness by the Manic Street Preachers reminds me of a particularly bad hangover that I had once, but I won't go into that one. Okay, let's move on to some actual Dreamcast news.